Welcome to the Journal of Accountancy podcast. This is Senior Editor Neil Amato. This episode is a conversation with John Garrett, who uses humor to encourage professionals to bring their full selves to work and organizations to embrace employees' passions. First, take a moment to listen to a word from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
John Garrett has his own podcast where he often interviews finance professionals. John himself is a former practicing CPA, having worked for PwC and other organizations before he was able to parlay his love of humor into a stint as a stand-up comic. He has opened for the band Train and for comedian Louis Anderson. Today, John has merged his finance life and comedic life into one, working as a speaker on the topic of creating a more engaged work culture. Here's the episode with John Garrett. John, thanks for being here today.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thanks so much, Neil.
So to introduce our audience to you, tell me a little bit about what you do right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, I speak and consult with accounting firms and conferences and companies about not letting professionalism suffocate your personality, showing them that how we're defining our expertise is narrow. We hired the whole person, not just the accounting part. So let's nurture and shine a light on that, the whole person, and not forget the human side of all of us.
Part of the branding on your website is a green apple, and also the name of your podcast, I believe, the
Yes.
Green Apple
Yeah,
Podcast.
Yeah.
What's the significance of you to the green apple?
Yeah, the significance is that the green apple is not the stereotype. I believe that the stereotypical accountant is not the nerd that does work and goes home and does more work. It's a real person that has passions and interests outside of work. And so you're still an apple, you're still an accountant, but just be your own kind of that. Bring your own personality and your own flavor to it all. And the ironic thing is that the characteristics of apples are very similar to the characteristics of accountants because they're durable and they have a long shelf life and they grow round over time. And so it's exactly the same. But I'm not asking you like Seth Godin in his book Purple Cow. You know, it's a similar concept of, you know, if you're not standing out, then you're invisible. And we work so hard for getting our degrees and getting these certifications and all these extra letters that we put after our name on our business card. And yet, when it comes to a client choosing you, they're not choosing you because of that, because every other one of us has this exact same thing. But, you know, it's what you're and. You know, you're an accountant and a cyclist. You're an accountant and you play the piano. You're an accountant and you're an artist. Whenever you meet someone, and then, you know, it's what you're and. Like, that's what I care about. That's what actually creates those human connections. And plus, that's what also gives you a unique skill set that you can bring to work. 91% have a passion or an interest they regularly do outside of work. 91%. So that means that if you're doing something outside of work and you're a normal person, then you're the norm. That's actually the stereotypical accountant. It's not, you know, but for some reason, you know, bigger companies and bigger firms, they hire you because of the extracurricular activities, but then they never give you the time to go do the extracurricular activities. And then we wonder why turnover is so high and we wonder why engagement is so low. And it's because you're basically slowly suffocating your people. I mean, this is, I had someone on my podcast recently who does karaoke competitions. He's amazing. He's a IT guy. We had a firm in Houston, and he's amazing singer. And he said that singing is him breathing and happy. And so what does you breathe, you know, we all have these things where we're breathing in our happy. And accounting's great, and accounting's a good job, and it's an excellent profession, but it's not really always what fuels you. It's not what drives you, because, you know, you're a runner. So it's out of the bag now, everybody knows. So, you know, no matter what job you have, you're still a runner. No matter what job you have within the organization or you go to a different firm or a different company, you're still that. That passion still goes with you no matter where you are. You retire, that's your thing. And so that's really who you are. And so I think that that's what gets to the core of it. And I think it's really important that we shine a light on that and share that.
So you've kind of touched on this already, but you've said that accountants and really professionals in general shouldn't be that stereotype.
No.
Why not?
Well, because, and the thing that frustrates me so much is, one, it's absolutely exhausting. Because you walk in the office and you put on this veneer or this armor suit that is not your real self. You're acting like what you think a partner should be, or what you think a CFO should be, or what you think this particular... No, it's you. You're the manager. You're the CFO. Be you. And it's that's exhausting, because then when you leave, you're a different person. I mean, it's absolutely exhausting. And number two, and probably more importantly, is that you have a skill that you're not bringing to work. The Greek philosopher Aristotle talked a lot of this. He had the word was eudaimonia. It's eudaimonia. So eudaimonia, and it means good soul. So it's basically it's not an emotion where it's fleeting. It's actually a state of being. And I believe that professionalism does everything it can to prevent eudaimonia from happening. Because you're coming to work, and people have skills and talents that they are practicing outside of work with their passions and their interests. If you do community theater, your presentation skills are way better than everybody else. So when it comes time to present to a client, should it be the person that does community theater, or should it be the person that loves doing jigsaw puzzles? It should probably be the person doing community theater. Now, if you never share that you do community theater, well, you're just another CPA that's on the team. But we all have a unique skill set and a unique talent, and you know who else has passions and interests outside of work? Our clients. So now all of a sudden we make a relation with them. So, you know, imagine if you're a client and you're looking for someone to come in and do some services. If everyone comes in and pitches, well, we're the best ones because we do it faster, and well, that's what the last group just said, and the group before them. Like, what makes you different? And it's not your degree and your certification. That's actually what makes you the same. And so professionalism is teaching us this false promise, and it's a never-ending chase of, and I'm not saying not to get that and that it's not important. It's very, very important. But the thing is that just gets you to the table. That's the bare minimum. So it's not actually, you're not actually standing out. It's these passions and interests. What's your end is what makes you different. And, you know, when you're a firm, yeah, every firm or every, you know, does audit, every firm does tax, you know, but not every firm does audit and has someone who loves to curl or has the land speed record in motorcycles or, you know, whatever it is, or plays in a rock band. You know, then all of a sudden it's like, hey, that's actually really cool. And you create that relationship with that client to where they're probably not going to leave. And when your employee engagement is so much stronger and you actually have a relationship with that person, so you have more strings, if you will, that connect you than just the one work. So if that work string gets tense and you have to deliver some critical feedback or things aren't going well, well, you know what? They know that you still, quote unquote, love them because you have this relationship with them and you're connected to them in other ways. There was also a study done at Duke University several years ago where it found that people that have more dimensions to them, more things outside of work, are actually less prone to anxiety and depression, which is huge because, I mean, imagine that if all your eggs are in the work basket. I just work and everything, my whole identity is work and all I do is work. And then you get some bad news, or you don't get that deal, or you don't get promoted, or you don't get that. Well, that's a 100% blow to the face. Where if you also are a runner and you like to do art and you have family and maybe you're involved in church or community service or whatever, well, you know, that work news is not great, but I also get my source of identity from other things. So it's not a full 100% blow. So it just makes you a happier, more effective, more productive employee, and I think then you can reach that eudaimonia state.
That's well said. It's interesting you brought up the community theater example. We actually had an article about the value of improv.
Oh, okay.
In terms of business.
Yeah, yeah. You know. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's all things, you know? I mean, I had a guy on my podcast who loves to do curling. He's in Australia, Paul Meisner, and he he's an accountant, and he's like, oh, it's my way to get to the Olympics, because there's only 7 people that do curling in Australia, I guess. So he's like, but he said his leadership skills are so much better because you're leading a team. And this is in your free time. So you're practicing leading a team. And so then when you get into the office, all of a sudden when you have to lead a team, it's like, I've been doing this the whole time. You know, it's a muscle group that you're exercising that everyone else isn't. And it gives you that unique skill set to stand out. I mean, if you're a pilot, your attention to detail is clearly better than mine. If you're a volunteer firefighter or an EMT, your compassion for people is so much better than someone else. And these are all skills that make you a better accountant. It's not just a neat to have, it's cool to find out what people do. No, like when I came out of school, it was work-life balance was kind of a newer concept. Basically, don't kill yourself. Like, you know, basically is what they were saying. But now I'm saying they didn't really care what we did, but now it's like, care what they do, and you can leverage that a little bit. But not only that, but the firm wins, but so does the person. Because, I mean, if somebody really does like art and is an artist and creative, and then they're tasked with creating the slides or doing something that's creative, and that's them breathing and happy. You know, let them do that. Let them share that talent. They're going to love it there. They're going to the engagement's going to go up. Turnover goes down. Things are good.
So you've told a story about working, I believe, at PwC and kind of having one of those passions of yours come out and help get you remembered by someone you barely knew.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this was what gives me, I guess, the clout to be able to talk about this. It's not just something that I'm just making up. I mean, I did it on accident. And I want everyone to do it on purpose. And so I was with PwC, loved it there, really enjoyed my time, really good people. And when I was there, I started to do stand-up comedy for fun. And I just did it at night, as a hobby, you know? I mean, I'm terrible at it. But one day, you know, someone at lunch is like, oh, so what'd you do this weekend? Oh, well, I drove to, you know, Springfield, Illinois and did a comedy show. And they're like, wait, what? And so 12 years later, I was at a pretty big conference, and I walk in, and the event planner's there, and she says, Mark Bumgarner is his name. And I said, I've never heard that name in my life. And she goes, well, he knew you. He saw the names of all the speakers, and right away pegged you as, I know John Garrett. That's the guy who did comedy at night. And I was like, wait, what? And so then backtracked, figured out that he was at my original PwC office in St. Louis. But he was in tax, and I don't know how taxes work. So I've never met him. I've never been to the tax floor. But yet somehow through the grapevine, it spreads that there's this guy that does stand-up comedy, and 12 years later, he remembers me. So now I'm on a short list of people that he recalls, and it's for nothing work related. Thank you very much. You know, right. And I had a pretty good resume. I mean, graduating University of Notre Dame, passed CPA exam, had some great work experience. We remember you from a hobby that you did, making zero money, and you were really terrible at. You know, I mean, when you're new, you're supposed to be. And so I started to share that story with people, and then, you know, you could just tell. And that's the thing is, you know, there's two parts to it. One is, like, in the moment, I mean, you have a skill set and you can stand out from others. But also what's really scary is if you don't share that side of you, you're completely forgettable.
So you keep saying you were terrible at comedy, but you got to meet Louis Anderson and Jay Leno in professional settings.
Yeah, well, early on, you're terrible. And I say that because everyone's terrible at their hobby. We all are. I mean, that's why we're not getting paid for it, right? That's why it's a hobby. But, you know, that's the other thing is I kept doing it even though I'm not getting paid. And, you know, accounting, you know, in your jobs, your careers, if you stopped getting paid, would you still do it? You know, probably not. And so that's the thing that I'm trying to show people is these passions and interests are really what drives you. I mean, you know, you're not getting paid. You're probably not that great at it, but keep doing it because it's you breathing and happy, and you don't have to be good at it. You know, and I think that's the problem, I think, is the reason people don't share a lot is, you know, in my research, I found, you know, some people say there isn't a charge code for socializing or we don't get paid to get to know each other. And it's like, actually, you do. That's how teams work. Hello. Do your hobby. Get energized by it. Breathe in the happy. And then bring that energy to work. And then somehow at work, whether it's clients that do things that you love to do as a hobby, That'll be excellent. Then you're super excited to go to work every day. Or it's other people at work that you know about them, and maybe they do the same thing. So now you genuinely care about the people around you. And so comedy-wise was you know, I've done some pretty cool stuff. So I left in 2005 full-time, been on the Bob and Tom radio show 10 times, which is a national radio show. I have a comedy album on Sirius XM satellite radio right now, open for Louis Anderson in Atlantic City and some other shows. Hung out with Jay Leno, met Jerry Seinfeld. I've been on stage over 2,000 times. Wrote in a sports award show for Notre Dame football that was nominated for an Emmy. I lived in New York City for 10 years and did it. You know, I mean, it was legit, and it's a lot of work, and it's certainly a passion that I had that I just accidentally got good at and was able to make a living at. And now I kind of marry my two old lives together. There's my comedy life and my accounting life. And so when I come to speak to firms and I come to speak to conferences and corporate events, it's using the comedy as the vehicle to deliver that, I believe, this really, really important message on really, I think, culture.
So you don't seem at a loss for words, but I'm wondering how you were when you first got around those guys.
Oh, the comedians?
Yes.
Oh, well, you know what's really cool is, like, comedians are, they remember where they came from. So, Jay Leno, probably the nicest guy I've ever met. I mean, it was unbelievable. I met him, I've met him several times now, but the first time I met him, I had lived in Milwaukee, and he was, we were in the green room of the Comedy and Magic store in LA, where he does a show every Sunday. And a friend of mine, Jimmy Brogan, opens for him every Sunday. And so I was watching the show, and Jimmy goes up, and I wasn't sure if I was gonna be able to meet Jay first time. And so then in between, all of a sudden a guest comes in, and they're like, well, we have this guest, it's Arsenio Hall. And I was like, what? Like, that's crazy. And I mean, this is like in 2001, I guess. And I was like, this is amazing. And so then the door guy came and tapped me on the shoulder in the audience. And he's like, Jimmy Brogan will see you now. And I was like, what? And so I went back in the back, and then we go back into the green room. So while Arsenio Hall's on stage, I'm in this tiny green room with a ton of food with Jay Leno, Jimmy Brogan, who's also legendary, and a couple other people. And Jay was coming to Milwaukee in like 3 months. So they had the billboard up and stuff. And so I said, oh, you're coming to Milwaukee in 3 months. He's like, I don't know where I'm going in 2 weeks. But it was really cool. We talked, and he was talking, he had been in Vegas. He was talking about Carrot Top and Carrot Top's numbers versus his numbers. I mean, mega, like, what? But he was very careful to come back to me and, so are you married, or what clubs are you working? Oh yeah, I remember that club, and like whatever. And then all of a sudden Arsenio was done, and he the MC's like, all right, you gotta go. So he runs out, and then he actually runs back, peeks in the room, goes, Jimmy, make sure he gets 2 tickets to my show in Milwaukee, and then runs back out onto stage. And so then we're hanging out a little bit, and Jimmy's like, well, you gotta get out there and see Jay. And his stand-up is amazing. Whatever you think of him from The Tonight Show is one thing, but his stand-up live is amazing. And so we go out and watching him, and I'm not even in awe, because it's like, I was just hanging, it's Jay. Like, he was sitting right next to me, like, yes, 10 minutes ago. And sure enough, a couple days later, Jimmy called from The Tonight Show office, and he's like, Jay was serious, like, how many tickets do you want? And I was like, well, I guess 2, because this is weird. And so, yeah, fifth row center, right there. And it was amazing. And, just really cool. And Louis, really, really nice guy. We did the Borgata in Atlantic City, is about 1,000 seat theater. It's huge. And really, really cool. And but they're just regular guys. I mean, we're just regular people, Jerry Seinfeld, very private though. So that was brief. But then there's like Wayne Cotter. He was with IBM and left to do comedy. He hosted A&E Evening at the Improv in the late 80s, early 90s. And he was actually very helpful in talking with me about, making that transition and stuff. But you're just hanging out with just your brothers, kind of your sisters. We all get it.
So this is a Journal of Accountancy deep cut that you mentioned, the Comedy and Magic store. That's the name of the place?
Yeah.
The co-owner of that place is a CPA.
Yeah.
Who I've written about.
Yeah.
His name is John Lacey.
Right, John Lacey.
Have you ever met him?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Oh, I have. Yeah. So he's the nicest guy. The nicest guy. And yeah, and so cool. Yeah, because actually the last time I was there, we were hanging out and then I was like, wait, you're a CPA too? Like, this is cool. Yeah, no, really good guy. Yeah, but the Comedy Magic Store, the comedy shows there are amazing, but every Sunday Jay's there. And yeah, but even during the week and on the other nights, it's a really, really cool club.
In the photo we ran with the article, it's him, his wife, and Jay Leno.
Oh, yeah, sure. See, there you go.
So where do you think your urge to be funny came from?
I think it's because when I growing up, my dad was in the military and the Air Force. And so every 2 or 3 years, we would move. And I think that I learned that people like the new kid that has jokes. You know, if humor can break down a lot of walls, you know, but that's, I think, where it came from. And it wasn't my own comedy. It was jokes, you know, like from a joke book or street jokes or things that now you would read on the internet. That's what, you know, it started with. And my grandpa was pretty funny as well. He always had a couple of, you know, jokes in his pocket type of thing. And in the humor in the workplace, there's a friend of mine, Andrew Tarvin, who's a really good buddy of mine. And he's had a TEDx where he talked about this, but he says, you know, it doesn't have to be the humor that you create. And it doesn't have to be comedy. Comedy's next level. Humor is just things that make people smile and make people kind of chuckle. And it doesn't have to be something you created. It could be a meme or a video or something that you found online on the internet. And as long as you give attribution to who created it, then yeah, you can weave it into your presentation. You can weave it into your emails to all your staff. You know, you can, it doesn't have to be all serious all the time. You know, there are some firms that I've consulted with that the partners are going to retire in the next 5 years, and they're like, I don't know what I'm going to go do. Because I really think that, you know, we all had these passions and interests when you were in high school and college, and then slowly over time, they go dormant, and then they go extinct. And then you're getting ready to retire, and you're early 60s, you've got a good 25, 30 years of life left with all the money that you would need, and you don't know what you're going to go do. And that's probably the scariest thing to me.
So how did you make the leap from accounting to where you are today and still able to play on those kind of two former jobs that you say that you are a big part of you?
I never once thought that I could ever do this for a living. I never once thought that anyone, I mean, I grew up watching, you know, Kids in the Hall and Saturday Night Live with Mike Myers and Dana Carvey, and then a little bit later, Adam Sandler and David Spade and Chris Farley and all that group. And then, you know, Jim Carrey on A Living Color. And I mean, that's all more improv and theater stuff. But, you know, as far as stand-up goes, I mean, that's not a job. Like, you don't go to college and get a degree and a job in comedy. Like, what? And so you just kind of just start doing it, and then you get better at it, and then you get better at it, and then you reach this point where, you know, you're starting to take vacation to go do it. And you're starting to get paid to do it. And so that was happening in the comedy side, along with getting on the Bob and Tom show, which is a pretty big deal in a lot of cities. That's the new Tonight Show with Carson, basically. It's a big deal. And so that was happening. And then on the accounting side of my career, my life, we had this new manager that came in from the outside, and we did not get along at all. And so I'll just leave it at that. So it was kind of this perfect storm where my accounting career was kind of not going how I wanted it, and the comedy was really starting to take off. And so it just kind of, there's a gap between you have to make this jump, and for everybody, it's very far. But when that perfect storm starts to happen, that gap gets shorter. And it makes it an okay leap to make, to where, I did. And again, I do not advocate that anyone does it for anything, because it's hard. It's really hard. There's no steady paycheck. There's no career ladder to climb. You're just out in outer space. There's no up or down or left or right, or there's no someone that you can exactly follow in their footsteps. Even though I had met and hung out with all these really great legendary comedians, I can't do exactly what they did to get to where they are, because they all did it differently. And so you just really, it's a lot of hustle and a lot of hard work and a lot of just fortitude to really fight through that. And you can't mail it in, because if you mail it in, then no one else is doing your work for you. So it's very, very hard. But then the really cool thing is it was doing the comedy clubs for a long time and driving to every city. Whenever I meet someone, I'm like, oh, where are you from? And they say, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that. I've been there. Why? And then you name the comedy. How do you know the comedy? Because I have to know all of them. Like, I mean, you know, I have to get, basically you get one job and then you have it for several years. I needed 50 jobs a year. So, you know, I have to get a job every weekend. And so it's needing to know where they're all at. And you get to that. But then the really cool and the really rewarding thing, I think, is making this transition to using the comedy for good, I guess, to deliver this message that I really believe is really, really important and something that isn't really being talked about a lot. And I think that it's a real difference maker, and it has absolutely nothing to do with a generational thing. It's not a millennial thing at all. It's all the way from the baby boomers down to whatever's past millennials. It's really important that we all need to do. And so it's really rewarding to see how I can come in and speak and make people look through a different lens and see something in a different way, and then actually affect a change to make a better work in a more engaged culture.
So your message to companies, one of the messages or organizations, is that they should celebrate individual employees' passions.
Take a little bit of time to be genuinely interested in the people around you. I mean, it's a simple thing. I mean, I don't like Starbucks. So people always give out Starbucks gift cards, right? It's like, oh, it's Christmas time, here's some Starbucks gift cards or whatever. But if you find out that someone just got a dog, or if you find out that someone loves to play a musical instrument or whatever, you know, you get them a $25 gift card to PetSmart now, or you get them a gift card to Sam Ash or a music store, or you get them a gift card to a running shoe store or whatever it is, now they're like, wow, like you actually care about me. Like you, I'm not replaceable. I'm not just a widget and a cog in this big machine. I'm John Garrett with a unique skill set that you value. And it's not coddling people. It's not treating them like a baby and like whatever. It's just treat them how you would want to be treated. I mean, you know, you're around them more waking hours than your family. I mean, really? So why do you not care about them? I mean, and then you, but, or if you're not going to care, then say you don't care. Don't act like you do. Just say, look, we don't care, but we pay you a lot of money. Okay, cool. Got it. At least you know what you're getting into. But if you're going to not care, and then you're going to wonder why turnover is so high or engagement is so low, it's right there. I mean, it's free. Just be genuinely interested in the people around you. And then the accidental byproduct is, these people now have a skill set and a talent that they can bring to make your team better and to make your firm better, to make you more relatable to clients or other departments within your corporation, that now all of a sudden you have a rock star team. And people are alive, people are engaged, things are now in color. They want to come to work because they want to come, they want to share those talents, they want to work with those clients that do those things, they want to be around people that they're also excited about.
Once again, that was John Garrett. John is the voice of the Green Apple podcast. For more Journal of Accountancy podcast episodes, visit journalofaccountancy.com or subscribe on iTunes.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.